Good evening, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Pamela Varcone, your host this evening. Tonight, we will be honoring Women's History Month by speaking to two women who have made a little history on their own. Diane Whitry, composer, conductor, author, and the first woman to lead the Allentown Symphony Orchestra. Then in the next segment of our program, joining us will be Dr. Stephanie Alexa, scientist, teacher, coach, and the first woman president of the Lehigh Valley Angel Investment Network. We'll then bring you both of our guests together for your questions and comments. Please stay with us and join the conversation by calling in to 610-758-8810. And now let's begin Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Pamela Varcone, your host for this evening, and we're going to begin with composer, conductor, and author Diane Whitry, talking about the importance of pushing boundaries and breaking stereotypes. And Diane, you certainly have done that.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are really interested in hearing about your childhood and your background because reading your bio was just fascinating. You started being an entrepreneur and you started breaking boundaries at a very young age.
Yes, I was always doing things a little bit outside the box, and I always had little side businesses even when I was a child growing up. And I remember in junior high school, we weren't supposed to bring candy to school, but I always would stop by the store before school, and I would buy up all this candy, and then I'd sell it to my friend at like five times what I paid for it. You know, it was just a way to make some money.
And you had a little black market candy business going.
I did. And then my other business, when I was in college, actually, I had a used bike business. I went to USC in Southern California, and you know, people used bikes to get around campus, and they didn't want a really good bike because it would get stolen. And so I would go to the police auctions and buy up, for like $5, $10 a bike, buy up all these old bikes and take parts from one and put them on another and sort of recreate these bikes and sell them once again to my friends, for $25, $30 a bike. But it made a lot of good spending money.
A 300-400% profit just on the bike.
Exactly. I only go into businesses that I have at least a 300-400% profit.
You came from a very creative family.
Yes.
Both your parents. Tell us about them.
Well, my father was a scientist, and he specialized in electron microscopy, which is a scientific thing that I really still don't know what it is, but it deals with designing and building electron microprobes. And he was very big in this field very early on and did a lot of international work. So I was very lucky. We grew up living in Southern California, but I also lived in England for a year, and I lived in Japan for 6 months when he was on sabbatical. And then my mother was really the sort of creative musical side and also art side, and there was always arts and crafts going on in our basement. We had sort of a summer school. There were five kids in my family, five kids next door, three kids across the street, two more kids, and everybody sort of congregated in our basement in the summers. We had a printing press, believe it or not. We had a loom. We had all sorts of creative
things. You had these things in your basement?
In our basement, yes. My dad actually conned us when we were young to print his business cards, a penny a business card. So it was probably slave labor at that time period. But we also could make our own wood prints by, actually carving a wood block and then printing our own Christmas cards. So it was a very creative sort of family.
But then didn't you con him back when you wrote your first book?
Yes, I wrote my first book at the age of seven, and I loved to write, and I always felt that I was going to be a writer, and I would write these stories, and I would illustrate them, and then I made my dad type them all for me, and then he helped me bind them, and I still have these stories that I wrote when I was a pretty young child.
Well, that's a fascinating background, especially when you consider how related mathematics and music are. In the way people relate to them and the way the brain relates to them. So the fact that you had a father who was a scientist and you're musical is probably not that amazing, although your career has certainly been amazing. All this time, you have also been a teacher and a mentor, and you have helped people along the way. Tell us about that.
Well, I think teaching is part of what everyone in my family does. My sister is a teacher. My father was a teacher. And I started teaching violin privately when I was in junior high school, which seems like quite a young age to teach privately, but all my friends were actually babysitting, and I figured out I could make more money with less amount of time by teaching violin lessons. And there were some other young children in the neighborhood that wanted to play, and so I became the local violin teacher. And from
at what age?
I was junior high school. I was eighth grade, I think, when I started teaching.
My goodness.
Yeah. And I would have many recitals at our house. My mother was very understanding, you know, because I would take the family room and sort of monopolize it for a whole afternoon to teach all the lessons. But then I kept teaching through college. And when I wanted to audition for the first conducting program, the graduate degree at USC, the requirement was you had to have a year of conducting experience. But the catch-22 is nobody will hire you if you don't have any experience, especially to conduct an orchestra. So I actually founded, when I was a junior in college, I founded a summer music program for young people in the city of Pasadena, and I did it through the recreation department. So I basically went to them with a proposal. I needed a summer job anyway, and I went to them with a proposal saying, you know, if we get this many students enrolled, we will charge them this amount of money. You will pay me. I will get the other staff. We'll put this whole thing together, and we'll have, you know, 2 4-week summer music programs, including concerts at the end, which will be open to the public and free community concerts. And they went for this idea. And so I did that for the next 3 summers, and that's where I got my first conducting experience.
So take us from college and the recreation department to where you are now. That is really quite a leap, because you are literally a world-recognized composer and conductor, and that is not a usual position for a woman. So take us from college to how you got started and what it was like breaking those glass ceilings.
Well, and it's interesting because I never, ever thought about them as being glass ceilings. So I'm probably just very oblivious to the world. I grew up in a family with 3 older brothers, and whatever they did, I did. And I always felt that I could do anything that I set my mind to. And the turning point for me was getting into the graduate program at USC. It was one of the top programs in the country, and they were only 4 people accepted each year. And then from there, I was very lucky that I was able to work for the Los Angeles Philharmonic in the summers and met Michael Tilson Thomas and worked with him very, very closely and worked with him as his assistant. Worked with the Ojai Music Festival, which is a very renowned new music festival in California, and was the associate conductor there. And through that, met other people in the field. My first paid conducting job that was a full-time job was the Greater Miami Youth Symphony in Florida. But at the same time, I was also the assistant conductor of the Pasadena Symphony in California. So
You were commuting?
I was commuting. I've always commuted. Ever since graduating from college, I've always commuted to more than one job, because that's sort of the musician's life. You know, sometimes the commutes are closer, but we do a lot of commuting. And then I got my first professional orchestra at the age of, I think I was 28 years old. So I was lucky to get a professional orchestra at a young age, because that allowed me to learn and grow. And it was from my experiences with these 2 orchestras, the Youth Symphony and the Professional Orchestra, that I got inspired to write the book that I wrote, which is called Beyond the Baton. And it's a book for conductors, but not really a conducting book. It's a book about artistic leadership and the role of a music director off the podium, the role of a music director in the community. And it was the book that needed to be written, because there is no book like it in our field, so it's actually become sort of the industry standard, which is a lot of fun, because I run into a lot of people and they all say, oh yeah, you wrote that book. So,
well, you used the term luck a couple of times, and keeping with our theme here of Women's History Month and the women who are listening out in the audience that we want to share your wisdom and knowledge with, and Dr. Alexis, too, when she comes on the air, well, how do you feel about luck? That's a strange word for someone as accomplished as you to use.
Well, when I was in junior high school, I went to a music camp. And the slogan was to be at the right place at the right time with the right equipment and the right attitude. And I think that if you can really strive to do that, to be ready for when those opportunities come into your world so that you can really take advantage of them.
So even if you do not see an opportunity on the horizon right now, or even if you're stuck in a dead-end job and you think you just don't or have lost hope, you never know what's around the corner, and always prepare yourself.
Life can change in a moment. A blink of an eye, it can change, and your whole perspective can change. And I always, every day I wake up and I wonder what mini miracles are going to happen today. And I call them mini miracles because when things happen that you totally don't expect, that just come into your life, and you go, wow, that's really neat.
It is really neat. And we would love for you to come into our life. Please call in if you'd like to speak with Diane Wittry, or if you have a question or comment for us at 610-758-8810. So, Diane, if there are struggling musicians, struggling artists sitting out there in somebody's garage or basement, living with their parents, what is some of your best advice for them?
My best advice is, you're going to laugh, but it's, I always tell, especially conductors, because there's so many people that want to be conductors and not enough jobs, I tell them to double their rate of failure.
Aha, uh-huh. Try more often.
Try more often, because the law of averages and the law of statistics is that the more you try, you know, if you don't apply for the job, you can't get the job. And you never know which job is going to be the right job for you. There was a horn player I knew, and he had taken audition after audition, and he was getting into his late 30s, and he was about to hang it up. He was, you know, he said, okay, this is my last audition. And his last audition was going to be with the Boston, you know, Symphony, and he got the job. And, you know, what if he had given up one audition before that?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to just, persistence is everything in every field, not just the arts and music. And then also be enthusiastic about what you do. You know, people want to be around people that are excited and that are just full of energy. And that single element can often change your career dramatically.
Well, I think you've probably had something to do with changing people's careers and trajectory, too, because you are a tireless advocate for the development of educational programs, and you are very involved with the Allentown Symphony's new, I may mangle this, El Sistema?
The El Sistema program
for underprivileged children. Tell us about that.
Yes, we are very lucky that we have this type of program, and this is modeled after a program that's happening in Venezuela. But the program is really to give music to young people that could not afford lessons. And they are put in a program after school for 3 hours every single day after school, and often on the weekends too. And it's to give them a family to be with. It's to enrich their lives. It's to build self-esteem, develop discipline. It's all the good things that music brings from being a part of their life. We are now in our second year of the program, and we have 90 students involved, and we're just so excited about this. And we recently received a very large grant from the Getty Foundation, one of the top orchestras in the country, to receive one of those grants. So it's really a very special program for us.
Can you give us a success story from that program?
Well, we are currently only in our second year. So the success is that these students are playing concerts all over the Lehigh Valley. They start first on cardboard instruments. So this whole program is not about perfection. It's about performing and getting applause and feeling really good about yourself. But I will say that all of the test scores have increased dramatically from the students that are participating in this program, and we have a waiting list of students that would like to participate in the program, and we're hoping to keep growing it and building it.
Do the students come to the program through the school district?
Yes. This is currently at Roosevelt Elementary School in Allentown, and most of the students are from there. A few of them graduated and are coming back after school to participate in the program and keep going with it.
Well, you all also are a national conducting mentor for regional music directors in their first or second year through the League of American Orchestras. So you're going from the students up to the people who are really trying to make it as conductors. That must be very exciting.
It is. I love teaching, and I actually work on three different ways with that. I work with the League of American Orchestras. I'm also a mentor through the Conductors Guild. They have a mentoring committee nationally. And then I have three conducting workshops. So one is in Connecticut, and it's based upon my book. One is going to be in Kiev, Ukraine. And the other one was right here in Allentown in January. We did a conducting gestures workshop based upon a new book that I have coming out soon.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, perfect timing. We have a phone call. Oh, we do not have a phone call. They hung up. All right. They didn't want to wait any longer. Well, please do call back. And if you are out there and you would like to talk to us, please dial in at 610-758-8810. So there's a phone call. Okay, so they came back. All right, we now have someone on the line, and please state your name and where you're from.
My name's Helene, and I'm from Allentown.
Great. Hi, Helene.
Hello. I'm so enjoying this conversation. I'm just wondering how you made your way from the opportunities you had on the West Coast here to Allentown, and how did that happen, and how did you find the Lehigh Valley welcoming you as a woman in this position?
Well, you know, the Lehigh Valley kind of found me. Most orchestras, when they do searches, it's a long process, and what they will do is they will narrow down their candidates to usually five conductors, and they will invite them to guest conduct, and then after that, they will make a selection. And so it depends on, you know, how you work with the orchestra, what type of repertoire you're performing, and also how you relate to the audience. But I will say, when I came to Allentown, it just felt right. It just felt like this was a place that we could really do some great things together, and I've really enjoyed working with this orchestra. They're fabulous people.
Well, speaking as someone who has seen you conduct, the Lehigh Valley is certainly very glad and lucky to have you.
Well, thank you.
It's always a pleasure to be in Symphony Hall when you're in front of the orchestra. So thank you so much for that call, Helene. We really appreciate you calling in.
You're welcome, and I just find your life story just so inspiring. Thank you.
Oh, good, good.
Well, that's the general idea this evening as we celebrate Women's History Month, and that's why we have two such inspiring women as Diane Whitry and Dr. Stephanie Alexa with us this evening, because there are women out there breaking barriers and making history all the time, and some of them make it onto the evening news and some of them don't, but the bottom line is that every one of them makes a difference and every one of them influences the life of other women, and that's something very important for us to remember. We will be back very shortly. Please stay with us. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side in their 32nd season, presenting Ulysses Dreams, an exploration of origin and destiny, performed by the Touchstone Ensemble. This modern adaptation of the adventures of the hero Ulysses is performed in the form of a song cycle dealing with the characters of Ulysses and his relationship with various women in his life. April 13th to the 21st. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse, where our next guest has joined us, Dr. Stephanie Alexa, founder of Benchmarks Analytic Laboratories, and the first woman president of the Lehigh Valley Investment Angel Network. She is now sharing her experiences and knowledge also through her coaching company, Lead to the Future. Stephanie, welcome to the show this evening. We're so pleased to have you here.
Thank you. It's really a great pleasure to be here.
And You also have a wonderful story and a wonderful history of success and of blazing trails for women and making a difference for a lot of other people. In fact, your story starts not too far from the studio here in South Bethlehem.
That's right, Pam. As I sit here in the south side, I can look out the window and almost see the house where I grew up. I grew up just in a small row house on Sullivan Street, just off of Hayes, the road that goes up over the mountaintop. And I watched the mountaintop campus be built for Bethlehem Steel. So yes, I'm a Southside girl.
You really are, and you have quite a story. Tell us about that story. Tell us about coming from the Southside to where you are now.
Well, when I grew up here, the Southside was a really great place to be. It was full of small enclaves of various ethnic groups, but it was altogether a great community. It surrounded a lot of churches that were focused on ethnic diversity, and also the neighborhoods were just so welcoming with all the people working together and building community together.
And many of those families, their fathers and brothers worked at the Bethlehem Steel.
Oh, absolutely. My father was a Bethlehem Steel employee for his whole life.
And you went off to college, which was not that common for a girl from the south side of Bethlehem.
True. In fact, I was the first person in my extended family to attend college. And I went to Chestnut Hill College in Philadelphia, and I went there on a full scholarship. It was really through the help of Bethlehem Catholic High School and the Sisters of St. Joseph at Chestnut Hill that allowed me to go to college, because my family certainly could not have afforded it.
Well, you get some credit also, I presume, for being an excellent student and being a good candidate for that full scholarship.
Well, I was what you would call a studier.
Studier? You were studious.
I was very studious.
Would you say, Stephanie, that you were studious just simply by nature, or was there also a motivation knowing that education was kind of the ticket to where you wanted to go?
I think it was both. I was a little bit of a introvert and somewhat of a bookworm, but I also saw that was the way to build a future, and that education was the ticket to a great life.
Well, you went off to Chestnut Hill College on that full scholarship, and you've ended up with a PhD. How did that happen?
Well, right after college, I was a biology major in college, and I decided to continue immediately towards a PhD. So I went to Temple University and got a PhD in biochemistry.
And from there, you've worked for some Fortune 100 companies.
I did. First, I spent 5 years at Temple University on the faculty of the medical school, and I was teaching and doing research in the blood coagulation system. And after 5 years, I left and I joined the Roman Haas Company in Philadelphia, and then I worked for Air Products and Chemicals in Allentown for about 5 years.
And what led you to start your own very successful chain of analytical laboratories?
I think it was the perfect storm. It was seeing that there was an opportunity in environmental testing at the time, and I had just finished an MBA at Lehigh University. So I got my business background, and I was just itching to start a company and to be the person in charge. So what I usually tell people is it was a moment of insanity when I quit my job, borrowed some money, and started the first lab in Hellertown. And from then, it was just a roller coaster ride for 20 years.
And that roller coaster ride ended up with a very successful landing. You ended up selling the company.
Yes. In 2007, I was approached by an investment banking group who wanted to acquire the company and then continue to grow it by making more acquisitions. So I stayed on for 2 years to make some other acquisitions, to merge them, and to build an even bigger network. And I left that company then in 2009.
And you took that knowledge and those resources, and you started sharing them and paying it forward. Tell us about that.
Well, I tried really hard in 2009 to retire, but it just didn't take. And so the next thing I did was spent 2 years as the executive director for the Center for Vision Loss in Allentown. And I joined the organization as they were merging two nonprofits to form a unified organization that would serve the blind and visually impaired across the Lehigh Valley and across three counties. So I spent the 2 years bringing the teams together, refocusing them, and adding a little bit of maybe a business background to a nonprofit. I then hired my replacement, and he's doing a great job leading the organization, and now I sit on the board of directors and just get to watch their success.
Well, one of your claims to fame for your history-making status and being on this program tonight is being one of the founders and the former president of the Lehigh Valley Angel Investment Network. Tell us about that.
The Lehigh Valley Angel Investment Group started about 2.5 years ago, and a few people got together and talked about how this was a need that was a big need in the Lehigh Valley. We needed some people who would be willing to help support young entrepreneurs to get their businesses started by putting in small amounts of money to just get them over that first hump. And so the group started and continues to meet once a month. Every month we meet an entrepreneur and hear their story, and we invest in them. But it's not just the money that we give them. The angel investors in this group are so dedicated to helping these young people to get their businesses going that they spend a lot of time consulting, coaching, and helping to bring customers for them. So these people have the added benefit of 20 people who've made it, helping them get their business started.
So I presume that this is nothing like Shark Tank on television. It's not near that brutal.
We're a lot nicer.
And some I presume you fund and some you don't.
You're right. We don't fund everyone. We fund the people that we think have a good chance. And what we look at is the business plan, the product, but most importantly, the team. It's critical that you have a really good, strong team to lead that company. And the ones that we don't fund, we tell them why, and we tell them what they need to do, and we invite them to come back. So at times we have had companies come back 6 months or a year later and say, look at me now. And then they are good candidates for investment.
So tell me, are there women doing this? Have you had women come before you for funding? What is the ratio of men to women?
Well, with this investment group, I think we have only seen one woman mm-hmm. come through. And it was a very good business. We're in the middle of doing the due diligence right now. So, I can't say whether or not the group will invest until we finish the due diligence, but she certainly had an excellent presentation.
That's fabulous. Would you say, Stephanie, that because there are so many women starting small businesses, Pennsylvania has a very high percentage of women entrepreneurs. Would you say that women tend to start smaller, more flexible businesses that don't require the kind of funding that you're seeing before your investment network?
I think to a large extent that is true. Women start businesses that don't require a lot of funding mm-hmm. and that maybe have more attainable short-term goals.
You are also not only involved in the Lehigh Valley Angel Investment Network, you are also very involved in peer mentoring. And I know you actually want to talk tonight about how you're looking for four more people for your group. I'll bet you there's people out in this audience that are going to be thrilled to hear that. Tell us about that.
Well, it's really exciting. When I started my business, one of the things that helped me tremendously was being part of a peer advisory group. And it's a group of people that get together on a monthly basis and talk about working on their business, not just in their business. It's a time to get away with peers who are facing similar problems, to put your problems out there on the table, and to let others help you resolve those issues and problems. So I saw that there was a need for a group like this for young entrepreneurs here in the Valley. And we started up back in October.
Is there a name for this group?
It's called the Entrepreneur Circle.
Okay.
And the group meets once a month. And we encourage the people to bring challenges that they're facing and to get help from the rest of the group. And I have found that the members are bonding to form some really strong liaisons. They help each other outside of the meetings, in the meetings, and it's also kind of learning circle, so they can learn from each other as well as from myself as the facilitator. So the kind of people that are joining the group, we're looking for more members for this particular group. The person has to be the key decision maker in the company, the CEO, the president, or however you name that person, but the key decision maker. And the second criteria, it has to be a business that is a real business, not a hobby. So the person has to be dedicated full time to making this business a success. Thirdly, it has to be somebody who's interested in learning, growing, sharing, and helping others, because a peer advisory group is so dependent upon all of the members collaborating. And finally, it has to be a person who's willing to put in the time. We meet once a month for about 2.5 hours, and you have to make a commitment to set aside that time to be an active member of the group. But if there are entrepreneurs who are looking to join a peer advisory group, please contact me, and I'd be happy to meet with you, tell you more about the group, and then welcome you.
Is there a financial criteria? Does the company have to be doing X amount of dollars in gross sales, or how do you discern the size of the company?
At this point, we're welcoming people who are actually from pre-revenue to some of the companies are substantial in terms of the amount of revenue they have. So it's less important how much revenue they have rather than how willing are they to grow that business.
So it's really a lot about attitude and wanting to step forward and really make this happen, a commitment.
A commitment of attitude and passion.
All right. Well, isn't a commitment of attitude and passion kind of what life is all about in general? And how would people reach you if they want to be one of these four lucky people to come into this peer group?
Well, I do have a website, which is www.leadtothefuture.com.
Okay.
And I have a phone number and an email address on that website. So they can go to the website, read a little bit about my background so that they would be comfortable joining that group, mm-hmm. and then contact me through that email.
Okay, leadtothefuture.com if you want to be one of those four lucky entrepreneurs. Stephanie, let's take some of your life lessons and let's extrapolate them out to women who are sitting listening to us tonight and are trying to break through. And if any of you women are sitting out there and you would like to speak with Stephanie and in our next segment speak to both Stephanie and Diane, please do call in. Our phone lines are going to be open. And our phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So getting down to your best advice to women who are in a dead-end career or have a dream about starting that business of their own, what would you tell them?
My best line is, success is not a straight line. Keep trying, and when you see that there's another opportunity, take the opportunity and move forward. Don't give up. If you hit a wall, change direction, but don't give up.
Well, that sounds very much like advice from your book, and I think we should give you a chance to plug that a little bit. Late last year, you did have your first book published, and the name is?
The name is Leadership Lessons from a Vacuum Cleaner.
And that vacuum cleaner would be your Roomba.
Yes, my Roomba robotic vacuum cleaner. And this whole story came about because I was coaching a woman who said to me, I've really hit a wall. I've been having so much trouble and I'm not sure where to go. And I said, you need to be more like my Roomba vacuum cleaner. Hits the wall, changes direction, but it never gives up. And she challenged me to write a book based on watching this vacuum cleaner. And it was a lot of fun to do. The book was published last December, so it's been out for about 2.5 months. And I used this visual of the robotic vacuum cleaner to talk about some lessons in leadership, life, and starting a business.
And one more of those lessons beside when you hit the wall, change direction.
Well, let's see. The vacuum cleaner, you could put it anywhere. You could press the button. It figures out what the size of the room is, figures out where to go. And so the lesson you learn is be ready to take on a new opportunity.
Be ready to assess the situation and react accordingly.
Right.
Well, we are so pleased to have Stephanie and Diane with us tonight, and we are going to be taking your phone calls very shortly, right after our next break. And that number is 610-758-8810. Again, please call in and join the conversation with Diane and Stephanie and me, 610-758-8810. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and we will be right back.
WDIY is pleased to partner with Lafayette College and the Williams Center for the Arts, presenting the Compagnie Marie Chouinard on Wednesday, March 13th at 8 p.m. Lafayette celebrates the 100th anniversary of the groundbreaking Paris premiere of Vaslav Nijinsky's Dance, the Rite of Spring, with Igor Stravinsky's revolutionary music. For information, 610-330-5009 or williamscenter.lafayette.edu.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host this evening, Pamela Varconi, and I am thrilled to have back with me both of my guests, Diane Whitry, music director and conductor of the Allentown Symphony Orchestra, and Dr. Stephanie Alexa, the past president and one of the founders of the Lehigh Valley Angel Investment Network. And we are going to wrap up this program for the next 15 minutes or so, talking about the importance of women in history and women to us. And we had a fascinating conversation during the break about how we must not leave the men out of this discussion. It really is a partnership. And men certainly have an important role to play in success all around. So, Diane, let's come back to you. Role models, mentors, important people in your life.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as I was growing up, most of the conductors I worked with were men. And the field hadn't broken open at that point, but I think I grew up at just the right time period. And sometimes timing is everything with a business. It's knowing when to move on something. And if I had come into the field even 5 years earlier, I don't think the opportunities would have been available to me. I was very lucky because there were enough trailblazers ahead of me that people were not totally shocked to see a woman on the podium. even today, occasionally, I will have someone come up to me at a concert and say, you know, you're the first woman I've ever seen conducting an orchestra. And that always
You were the first woman I'd ever seen conducting an orchestra.
And it always completely surprises me because I don't think about it at all. But the world is changing. And so there were, you know, Sarah Caldwell was doing some stuff in Boston, Catherine Comey. There were a few people that I could look up to. But I think I'm so grateful that Joanne Folletta was ahead of me. She's the conductor of the Buffalo Symphony and also the Virginia Symphony. And then, of course, Maren Alsop with Baltimore Symphony has really trailblazed just enough ahead of me that I'm sort of like riding the wave right behind them. And it just makes it a little bit easier that I – but my husband says, yeah, you're a pioneer. And I never think of myself as that. I just do what I love.
Well, sometimes following your passion is the very best strategy. And Stephanie, what about you? Do you have a mentor, people who have made differences along the way?
Well, it was interesting going to a college, which at the time was an all-women's college.
There aren't many of those left anymore.
There are very few left. And I do believe that they had an important role, especially at that time in history, because we were taught you can do anything you want. There are no boundaries. There are hurdles, but you can overcome those hurdles. You can be what you want to be. And I think that message helped to propel me into becoming a scientist, because it was fairly unusual back then for a woman to become a scientist. But it was an attitude that I just carried through and almost forgot that I was the only woman in the department.
And when you graduated from college and then went on to Temple, as you have told us before, and then taught at Temple for a while, and then when you started to get into the private sector, you were still in the field of science. Did you find any resistance to a woman in that field?
Yeah, there was definitely resistance to women in the field at the time. It was hard to break through to a senior management position.
Yes, because you have worked in several Fortune 100 companies.
Yes, it was, you know, definitely a glass ceiling in big corporations. And I think that was also one of the reasons why I decided to move out and to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. Because if you're running a small business, your customers don't care if you're a man, a woman, or, you know, if your hair is green. They simply want the best product for the best price.
Mm-hmm. You avoid a lot of the politics. When you talk to women who are successful entrepreneurs, and we won't put a dollar value on that, but they're making it as an entrepreneur, you find out that a lot of them took this kind of lateral sideways move out of the corporate structure to start their own business because they just simply were just tired of banging their head against that ceiling. I think that's really important for our audience to hear tonight, that you can still make it. But for those who want to stay within the corporate structure, for those who want to kind of come up through the ranks, I think it's important to know that it's not necessarily the girls against the boys, that game we used to play in fourth grade sometimes, or sixth grade. It's important, I think, for women to know that men can be wonderful mentors, men can be wonderful partners, and men can be very helpful to us on the way up. And on that note, we will go to our next phone call. And good evening. Please tell us your name and where you're located.
My name is Shayla. That's my nickname. My name is Susie Klein, and I'm in Allentown.
Well, welcome, Sayla. Thank you for calling in. What is your question and comment tonight?
Am I in the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize. Well, how does a grown-up find a mentor? I have ADD, and I have health problems, and all my life I've followed my dreams and my visions. I've done all kinds of things and really enjoyed doing it, but come up against myself, you know, sometimes in different ways, and, you know, have to start over or you know, but I have a dream of with children, getting them to understand about plants and like milkweed, you don't have to buy in a plastic bottle, and, you know, kids in my neighborhood could start seeds, and kids in neighborhoods with yards could grow the trees, and then, you know, when they're older, they could get a fruit tree. You know, just working with people like me that are disenfranchised or have been or even looked down upon. In my opinion, the guy that is a CEO is as important as the person that gives you a clean toilet. You know, and I'd like children to understand that.
Oh, absolutely. Stephanie, would you like to address that?
I think your question of how do you find the right mentor is so critical. First, you have to say, who do I want to be my mentor, and what should that person know, and what kind of person should it be? So look to somebody that you admire, someone who has been successful in the field that you want to go into, and then make contact. Most people are very willing and able to help others out and to reach out and be a mentor for someone who is interested in a partnership. So identify a key person who's in that field, and then see if you can make contact either directly or through your network.
I don't have one. You know, I've been so much a hermit for a while. I was taking homeless people in and detoxing them because I've been getting Social Security, and I wanted to do something, you know, and I loved it, you know.
Well, how about a volunteer opportunity? Sometimes one of the best ways to break into something permanent is by offering your services and volunteering and showing what you can do.
I've done a lot of that, but I don't want to make this too long and too much about me, but I know that there's a program that they have that I'd really like to be part of, and for some reason, things aren't just kind of clicking the way I thought that they might. And so, you know, that whole failure thing.
Well, sometimes
I thought I could get into the program where they teach you to be a master gardener, and I missed the deadline. The paperwork didn't come. But, you know.
Well, then you try again.
Right.
It's
going to be a whole nother year, but I believe that there's things I can do. And if anybody heard what is my passion and what I want to do, I'm at dreamingofwildflowers@gmail.com. Or maybe I can give you my phone number and they can call you, unless you wanted me to say it on the air.
No, we don't want you to give your phone number on the air,
but we'll
be glad to take that from you after you get off the air. And we wish you a lot of luck and a lot of success. Thank you so much for calling in. Well, you know, that was a wonderful example of how disenfranchised some women feel, and how hard it is sometimes to get traction and get started. That somewhat takes us back to our point about how it really has to be a village, and it has to be everyone involved, and we can't just look to other women, and we can't just look to necessarily people who are considered very successful. There's often people out there who are willing to help us. And there's often different paths that we can take to our own passion and our own success.
You know, and one of the things is the training that you need to do what you want to do, and really getting out there and finding where that training might be available. I know for women conductors, one of the reasons that women were not in front of orchestras earlier on is that the training was not available. Mm-hmm. And so nowadays, pretty much almost everything you would want to do might be available at a community college, at a university, different organizations. I think the volunteering was an excellent idea, because what a great way to see behind the scenes how something is done in the field of your passion.
And what a great way to showcase your own talents and your own passion.
Yeah. So you have to strategically figure out what you want to do, what organizations might be doing things that are parallel, and get involved with those organizations.
I think that that women have to also appreciate how far we've come. There was a wonderful, wonderful program on the other night about the history of the women's movement. It was on television, and it was on PBS, and I was just riveted, and quite frankly, not to give away my age, but I had been through most everything that they were showing on that program, and I likened it to a girlfriend in an email, kind of like childbirth. You forget about the pain because otherwise you wouldn't do it again, and that is really the way I felt when I looked at this two-hour special on the history of the women's movement. I had forgotten that we could not buy a car without a man's signature. We could not have a credit card without a man's signature. I remember getting my first really good job, and I was so thrilled. And I went to buy my first car, an Oldsmobile Cutlass. And I walked into the showroom, and I was just so excited. And I had my balloon burst very quickly by the salesman, and it sounds like a movie, but it absolutely happened to me, by a salesman who said, well, you come back when you have a man who will co-sign the papers with you.
Wow.
Those kinds of things really did happen, and I think it's important for us to appreciate how far we've come, and I think it's also important for this generation of younger women in their 20s and their early 30s to not forget about the struggle. You can always lose ground. Nothing is written in stone, and where we are now seems like we've always been here, but we haven't. Diane, do you have any stories? Stephanie, do you have any stories about being kind of discriminated against?
Oh, yes. I think I'm just about as old as you are, and so I have lived through those times. I remember trying to raise money to start my business, and the banks would not loan the money to me unless my husband, at the time, co-signed for it. And he knew nothing about the company, nothing about the business, but it was his signature that mattered. And it took a long time before they started to recognize me as the business owner. So there were a lot of those trials and tribulations. But I think that what is most important right now is that women have such choice. They can choose to do and be anything they want. And some women will choose to have great careers or to be entrepreneurs, and some women will choose to be mothers mm-hmm. and wives and take care of families. Mm-hmm. And all of those roles are equally important.
Very important that we honor all of those roles. I think what we've seen recently with the Yahoo CEO pulling everybody back into the office and the outcry over that, I think it's important that we understand that choosing to stay home and be a stay-at-home mom, or choosing to put your family first and maybe either putting your career on hold or not having a career at all except as a wife and mother and homemaker, is a perfectly valid choice for a woman. And I think it's important for us to honor that and recognize it.
Yeah, I think for me it's follow your passion. You know, you only get one chance to live your life, so why not live your life as you would love to live your life and do what you want to do and realize that you can, that it's possible.
If you would like to talk about your passion or talk to our guests, join the conversation at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So, Stephanie, have men played important roles also as you were coming up through the ranks and you were building your business? Would your business had gotten where it has without men involved in it?
No, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I was part of a peer advisory group, and I was the only woman in that group, and they played an important role. And I also had a mentor who was one of my teachers at Lehigh University for my MBA, and he was a great mentor, and we are still friends today, 28 years later.
Very, very important to understand and appreciate the important role that men can play in a woman's success. We now have a phone call, and we're going to go to that caller. Good evening, you're on the air. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Yeah, hi, this is John. I'm from Bethlehem.
Hi, John.
I just had a quick comment, a suggestion for the previous caller who said she didn't have a network, and there's a wealth of non-credit courses offered very reasonably at the community college, and I think it's a great opportunity for her to pick something in there that really interests her. She could probably find something that lines up pretty well with her passion, and you know, meet a lot of like-minded individuals and really broaden her network. And it could lead to something that that might help her in the future.
John, that is an absolutely outstanding suggestion. And thank you for bringing up our wonderful community colleges that we have here in the Lehigh Valley. They are a fabulous resource. Whether you are a student that is just coming out of high school and kind of needs to get your feet wet, needs to get an associate degree to get a better job, you're rejoining the workforce, you need retraining, community colleges are just a wonderful resource for whatever you need to build your life. And that is a fabulous suggestion for our previous caller, because I know that they do offer gardening classes and botany classes and that sort of thing, and that would be a perfect fit for her. John, thank you so much for that suggestion.
Good thing, and thanks for the show. I have two daughters, and you make a lot of really good points.
Oh, thanks so much, and they're lucky to have a daddy like you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, wasn't that perfect timing as we were making our point about how important men are to forming a partnership and building success? We've got about 4 minutes left, and I would like to leave our listeners with some final wisdom from our two wonderful guests. Diane, parting thoughts for our audience.
Parting thoughts. Well, for me, I think being a woman is something I don't really worry about. So, you know, for you out there that are listening, don't put blockades in front of you that you create in your mind. Keep an open mind, and I love the vacuum cleaner story because, you know, life really is like that. You're going to hit obstacles, whether you're male or female. We all hit obstacles, and I think perhaps women maybe give up sooner than men do, and so just really keep focused on what your goals are. The other thing, and I'm an idea person, so I'm going 3 million different directions all at once, but if you can keep focused on what your goals are, you will find ways around to really achieve your goals. And I have a saying, my latest saying is, water always flows downhill, and water will always find a way to keep flowing and going around the stones and the things in the way. And so be flexible like the water, but keep that goal of where you're going in mind.
Well, that is absolutely wonderful advice, and I think it plays into one of my favorite expressions is, how do you know you're lost if you don't know where you're going?
Yeah.
And having a goal and staying focused on it helps you stay on the road, even when the winds of life knock you off that road sometimes. You pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, and you head back in the direction towards your goal. Stephanie, final thoughts, parting words.
Boy, that was so eloquent. It's hard to follow.
I doubt that. It was eloquent, but you are also eloquent.
I think what I would like to say to the people in the audience is, be the person you want to become. And I like that phrase because it says, today, right now, I should be the best person that I can be because that's who I want to become. And it takes practice to become that good person. And that means in your career, in your life, in your friendships, in your relationships, in everything. Just be who you want to become.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic advice. And I hope our audience out there this evening has gotten some words of wisdom and pearls of wisdom from these two wonderful women, because we are very pleased to have them in the Lehigh Valley. They're making tremendous contributions all the time. They're mentoring, they're teaching, they're helping people learn and grow. And I want to thank very much our guests this evening, Diane Whitry, the music director and conductor of the Allentown Symphony Orchestra, and Dr. Stephanie Alexa, author, teacher, and one of the founders of the Lehigh Valley Angel Investment Network. I am Pamela Varconi, and it has been our pleasure to be with you this evening here on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Good night.